Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Carium, the telehealth platform enabling healthcare's digital transformation, helping you care for people within the fabric of their daily lives. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Josh Wildstein, CEO at Figure One. Welcome, Josh.
Hi, Matt. Thank you for having me.
So, Josh, what I always like to do before getting into the main part of the conversation is to allow my guests a little bit more of the floor to introduce themselves. So please give us your background.
Sure. So I've spent a little over 20 years, which is basically my entire career, in what I would call the business of healthcare and ultimately kind of the tech side of healthcare. So I'm from Atlanta originally and was a minor league hockey announcer of all things right out of college, and felt like the career path there was potentially problematic. And coming from a family of doctors, they all had imparted to me, hey, you have a good business head. The healthcare business is kind of screwy. Why don't you potentially look into that? So it turned out that in Atlanta, there was one of the better MHA, which is a Master's of Health Administration, and MBA dual master's programs. And so I did that. I thought maybe one day I'd want to run a hospital. I spent a year doing that and realized I definitely don't want to do that. Spent 2 years in consulting with healthcare clients, kind of in a boutique practice of Accenture. And then lo and behold, kind of as the internet was really growing quickly, WebMD was very early in its kind of evolution. And I joined there kind of as a first product manager and worked my way up. Spent ultimately 6.5, almost 7 years helping first on the physician side, then the consumer side, helping grow that business. That business ultimately went public and I left and have my own consulting business working with many startups, tech startups who are looking to compete with WebMD, really mostly on the strategy and business development side. And then joined Figure One as a consultant initially. I knew the prior CEO socially to help them figure out how to monetize and commercialize the business. And then in late October of 2019, I took over as CEO.
So you kind of, as you said, when you initially got into the business side, you thought you'd be running in a facility. So kind of what drew you more onto the technology side?
Well, I mean, if anybody's ever worked in, you know, hospital administration, you realize it's very bureaucratic and slow. And when you're like 26 or 27 years old and you're coming out of school and you want to kind of change the world, that doesn't necessarily align with the timing. As technology was really starting to grow rapidly, it became very clear that, you know, it was a younger person's game, so to speak. And it was also, you know, where the future of healthcare was ultimately going to go. And so traditional healthcare for me kind of left the rearview mirror very fast once I kind of saw those opportunities.
So in, you know, kind of as you described your career path, you know, what are some of the more appealing or what are some of the opportunities that drew you to Figure One in the space that it operates within?
Sure. So it's interesting. You know, I knew Greg, as I mentioned, socially, just through my wife. I had no idea that he was even in healthcare. We were living in New York City at the time and we would meet him just to meet up and catch up. And one day he mentioned that he has this platform with all of these physicians and he wasn't quite sure what to do with it. And, you know, having spent my whole career in the space, I knew that if you had something that really attracted physician engagement organically, you know, there are a lot of different ways to try to commercialize that. And so, you know, as I said to him, the opportunity was so compelling to me that I was willing to have a boss for the first time in 9 years because I had been working for myself. And so I was excited to come in and help kind of evolve the business and move it forward.
And kind of as you just said, having the physician involvement and engagement is not something that you necessarily hear too much, especially early stage with technology. So do you have any thoughts in terms of what it takes to actually drive physicians to engage with the digital tools?
Well, this is part of why I was really compelled by Figure One, is especially having been at WebMD and then consulting with a lot of other companies in the space. And I actually had, right when I left WebMD, authored kind of a piece that was published in a financial website of all places called Seeking Alpha, really around kind of, you know, the lack of return on investment for a lot of the advertisers or people trying to reach physicians. Ultimately, you know, to be able to organically deliver value to doctors is a very hard, it's kind of like saying, how do you create chemistry on a baseball team or a football team? You really don't necessarily have a golden formula to do it, but you know it when you see it. And in the end, it's kind of like any other piece of technology in the sense that when there is a very clear value proposition to the end user, the value will then grow organically through word of mouth and other kinds of things. And that's really what powered Figure One. It was all and has been all word of mouth growth up to and now really over 3 million registered healthcare professionals all time. And that's growth organically through 190 countries around the world, which is pretty amazing.
Do you think it helps to have, you know, kind of a diagnostic grounding, or is there not really, I guess, any secret sauce when it comes to, you know, that type of a background?
I think that healthcare, I mean, as you well know, it's very fragmented. And so there are a lot of people. I think in the beginning of my career, you would see a lot of companies trying to attack things very broadly and not doing anything really well. I think, you know, in the last, you know, handful of years, the companies that have really started to move things forward in a meaningful way are getting very deep in one kind of niche. And so it's both patient improvement, ultimately, but improving outcomes for the patient and making the clinician's life easier, whether that's either convenience or the ability to better improve the outcomes for their patients. And so I think ultimately that's where a lot of the value has to come. In the end, you're talking about an audience that is very inpatient, very busy, and the value has to be uber clear and very compelling right away.
No, and I definitely agree with you in terms of the, you know, the very busy. And I think that ties into the frustration that a lot of technology solutions have either interfered with or interrupted workflows and have not made things easier.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I mean, I think a lot of what we hear, and especially from clinicians that value Figure One, is that it is both very simple to use, you know, much less restricted than something like an EMR. And, you know, as you well know, you know, physicians today are spending way too much time, you know, as kind of, you know, dealing with paperwork and other kinds of administrative functions. And so Figure One and other tools that offer a similar value allow you in a very quick and simple way to pick up a phone or go to your laptop and do something fast that offers high value and kind of high impact.
And thinking of what you just said, of the, you know, the simple means of doing something that's high value or high impact, you know, do you see particular use cases that are easier to identify, where, you know, that impact or that value with?
Well, I mean, I think for us, the platform really, you know, is at its best when it is being used collaboratively by the group to help solve a problem. And so that's a very clear opportunity for, you know, a healthcare professional to either upload a case and say, hey, you know, has anybody seen this before? Can somebody put eyes on this for me? I'm kind of stuck. What should I do next? And very quickly, oftentimes in less than an hour, you know, I wouldn't say get a diagnosis, but get a very clear kind of, you know, sense of feedback about what might be going on or what you could do next. And so, you know, we have a very high percentage of cases, you know, roughly 40% of people that get their cases solved through Figure One. And ultimately, that's the best and most impactful thing that we can do is help the clinician solve a patient problem.
And kind of given that rapidity that you were just describing, can you give a little bit more detail in terms of what the collaborative process looks like and, you know, maybe how it compares to how things, you know, maybe traditionally would have happened, I'm going to say pre, you know, kind of internet connectivity like this, which is, you know, maybe potentially going a little far back in the future, although maybe not that too far when it comes to healthcare.
Yeah, well, I think for sure, you know, I think there's two things. One is the technology has enabled collaboration in a way that, you know, the overall healthcare system generally is still not taking full advantage of. And so, you know, for us, the user can upload a case and they can either page users within a specialty. And by page, in this case, we mean send a push notification or tag a case as, you know, somebody needing help. And very quickly, the right people can come in and put eyeballs on it. I think that what we see when we talk to clinicians is that even today, you know, and I'll give you one use case. We were speaking to a large oncology department within a very well-known hospital. And the physicians were saying, look, you know, if I want to get somebody to look at a case for me, I either have to run into them in the hall, run into them in the physician's lounge, or I have to reach out, you know, and maybe they're at their kid's soccer game or something like that. And so, you know, there are all sorts of things that even today make it difficult to do something very simple, which is, hey, you know, Matt, here's a case. pick up your phone, take a look, tell me what you think, and then go back to enjoying the soccer game or whatever else you might be doing. And so we really help enable that process to be high impact, but very quick and convenient.
Yeah, no, and I think you're right. It's, you know, trying to facilitate and make the attention grabbing a lot easier. I think kind of at the end of the day, as you're implying, one, it's going to help deliver more effective care for patients and hopefully produce, you know, better outcomes more quickly. But it's, you know, it also goes back into what you're saying of just the streamlining, not just for the physician or clinician who's seeking the input, but probably also for the clinicians on the other side of being able to deliver that additional information or that input that's being sought.
Yeah, that's a big part of it, is that there's a collegiality that's built in for people who want to come and help out colleagues. And, you know, at a high level for us, the real mission of the company is to democratize medical knowledge. And so the idea essentially is, look, if either one of us got ill today, we would likely get very good care. But if we were in other parts of the world, the person treating us may not be trained or even have an understanding of what's going on. Or in many cases, they're very general, kind of physicians treating either a large number of people or a number of people over a large demographic area. And so being able to come in and offer input is really compelling, but then also being able to just observe and learn from these cases that have been kind of presented and solved is an incredible, almost real-time, real-world educational tool that is really not available almost anywhere else.
And actually, kind of picking up on that observe and learn point that you just made, can you provide any examples of cases where you got particular feedback of users saying this was, you know, the opportunity to encounter something that's they either hadn't seen before or just wouldn't necessarily have had the opportunity to get a lot of experience quickly?
Yeah, so we have a wide variety of cases that get posted, and it really is interesting because the users of Figure One range from, you know, medical students who have a thirst to see everything up to, you know, kind of the more established physicians. And so, you know, if you are somebody who is just looking to see a classic presentation of X, Y, or Z, we offer that. And you can come in and say, wow, this is really compelling. I haven't seen this before. This is a great learning tool for me to just be able to get kind of a clear understanding of how a case that may be very basic gets presented. We also have a lot of rare disease, which is very interesting. And we see cases from all over the world that you know, you may never see in your entire career. And it helps physicians or other HCPs identify some of the trademark characteristics to potentially be looking out for these things. And then, of course, we have everything in between, which is, you know, a more complicated version of something that might typically be, you know, straightforward and goes off the rails, that kind of thing. So these are our learning tools that we see feedback on every case that really varies depending on where the physician or the HCP is in their career, but it's universal in terms of the value. And so medical students all the way up the line comment about, you know, the compelling nature of what these people are learning. And I think one part of what makes the platform very compelling is that you can come in and not have to be kind of interactive or socially engaged to derive an incredible amount of value. You know, so we have 100,000 cases. And if you don't want to comment, or if you don't want to upload, or if you're not somebody who wants to come in and add your two cents, you are still getting access to the largest, or at least one of the largest, real world case libraries that has ever been put together. And so it's an incredible learning tool kind of in a passive way.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Josh Wildstein from Figure One. We've been talking about, you know, kind of digital collaboration and, you know, sharing of case studies and kind of picking up on the last points you were just making, Josh. I'm wondering, you know, with that kind of diversity of cases and presentations, do you see that potentially factoring into health equity issues where, you know, there is maybe a higher opportunity to see, you know, cases from diverse patient populations where those types of populations might not necessarily be represented in, you know, the older textbooks or other education materials that clinicians have available to them?
Yeah, that's right. So we hear this a lot, which is, two things. One is we have cases that, like I mentioned, are not very common. And if you are somebody working in a rural setting, you may be able to see things through figure one that are not common in your area, but maybe more common in an urban setting, and the same in reverse. And as I mentioned, we have people in countries all over the world. And so you see a lot of things that are necessarily local. But for example, things like we had a patient with a case that was uploaded for an African-American patient with melanoma, and the uploader had never seen a case like that in their entire career, both education and training, not even an image in a textbook, all the way up through real world. And so they had not even thought or contemplated that potential diagnosis. And so, you know, this is kind of the benefit of the platform, is that, you know, you can start to surface things that are almost impossible to otherwise see in your day-to-day practice, and be able to offer value to the community and to get value back around these kinds of cases.
Yeah. And it kind of, you know, thinking about it from that perspective, it's, you know, I suspect this is going to be a somewhat poor comparison, but it's, you know, really, you know, feels like a form of kind of social media for clinicians, because, you know, it's, you know, I think as you're describing, there is a massive flow of data and information, and especially kind of tying back to what you said of, you know, you can be a passive or active user, you know, there's different flavors of engagement for, you know, the different perspectives or the different aims for, you know, pretty much every clinician that's out there.
Yeah. So we think of it almost like it's kind of a hybrid between a social network where you can come in and be actively engaged in the conversation, learn from experts and talk to experts, but you can also be passive, and it's almost a knowledge sharing type of platform in that way. And so, you know, for us, the real opportunity is to offer these real world cases, which may not show up in a textbook or a journal for years, and be able to say, look, if you want to know what's happening in the front line of medicine in real time anywhere in the world, you can come to Figure One and you can get value passively just by reading, or you can dive in and engage and try to make it more actionable. And so it's kind of a unique hybrid in that way.
Yeah, and kind of building off of that point, you know, as you said, of trying to drive that collaboration and obtain, you know, kind of perceptions or considerations from a bunch of different clinicians, you know, is that, you know, is it fair to characterize that as a form of crowdsourcing of information?
Yeah, I think that, you know, functionally that's very similar to what it is. You know, I think that's a touchy term depending on the context in which you say it, to whom you say it, but ultimately that's what it is. And so, you know, in medicine, you know, after the first couple of years of medical school, everybody's knowledge set grows through real world case interaction, whether you're reading about it in a journal or you're seeing it in a hospital. And depending on who you are and where you are, you can only have a certain amount of information in your head. You're overloaded typically with the amount of information that's out there in the world. And Figure One really kind of allows you to come in and, through kind of a personalized experience, get the things that are important to you and help you consume that additional information in a way that's beneficial. And so, you know, if you're in a community setting and you need feedback from people that are in an academic setting, you can do that through Figure One and kind of crowdsource that kind of thing. If you're in a rural country or another part of the world and you're seeing symptoms of things that are just not clear, you can come in and crowdsource that. And so, you know, we've been very effective and had a lot of cases publicized where cases have been uploaded in one part of the world, and I'll put this in quotes, you know, solved by clinicians in other parts of the world, very clearly solved. And so in the platform, there's a label that you can search through kind of the personalization that says, just show me solved cases, or just show me unsolved cases. And so there, it's a very quick way to kind of get a lot of value in the way that you want it.
And kind of thinking about, you know, as you said, where there's the determination that something has been solved, what types of misconceptions might you know, clinicians have in terms of, you know, the challenges or, you know, I'm going to say the potential liabilities that could exist from participating in this dialogue? Because it's, you know, I think unfortunately in healthcare, a lot of stuff comes down to liability concern of, if I do this or that, then it's, you know, going to potentially expose me to, you know, trouble down the road.
Sure. So this is something, as you say, that is very, very common. And we try to do a good job up front of making it kind of clear. So there's two things. One is that no case on figure one of the 100,000 we've got or the 100,000 we will get will go onto the platform without all of the personally identifiable information removed. And so, you know, kind of if we're going to get technical about it, we kind of call ourselves HIPAA exempt because there's no possible way that that can happen. And we offer both a combination of, you know, kind of computer aided or technology aided tools to let the user remove anything personally identifiable on their own. But as a kind of, you know, belt and suspenders approach, when a user uploads a case, it goes into a queue and we have human moderators that look at these cases to ensure patient privacy. I think the other thing that we hear, you know, frequently are clinicians who are concerned that if they were to add their two cents and potentially offer some feedback, could that down the road turn into some kind of legal liability? You know, if I say, hey, Matt, I think you should look at X, Y, or Z, and you do when something happens, could I as the commenter somehow be held responsible? And, you know, and I won't get into the legal weeds on it, but all of that stuff is kind of removed through the terms and conditions where it's made very clear this is kind of an educational platform. And we don't call any of these outcomes diagnosis. You know, there's obviously not an entire patient history uploaded. There's not all sorts of access to everything that would be in the EMR. And so, you know, that would be kind of the second potential legal issue. But to be honest, I think once people understand it, they get it. And the third thing I would just add as an aside is that we have a patient consent form in the product. It's not required, but if the clinician feels more at ease, it's translated into 100 languages. They can pull it up on their phone. The patient can sign it with their finger. We don't keep a copy. A copy can be kept by the clinician and the patient. And it's just kind of a release waiver, if you will, that just says, hey, as a patient, I know this is being uploaded to figure one.
Yeah. And kind of, I think you're picking up on the point where you're addressing the potential concerns of people, of the clinicians commenting. It kind of all circles back around to what you'd always hear about the old hallway consult, where kind of, I think back to what you were saying at the beginning, you know, a clinician calls a colleague and, you know, just because they're friends, you can reach out or, you know, catch them as you happen to walk by in the building together or, you know, any of those things. And it's really, you know, kind of translating those types of interactions into a new setting and likely informing people of how it's, you know, to some degree, an analog of what would have happened in the past without any concerns.
That's right. It's interesting. So I think the younger demographic kind of, you know, gets the technology more natively, and they are less, I think, concerned about that kind of thing. But what's interesting is that when you have detailed conversations with, you know, kind of mid-career physicians who may express concern about just what you said, and then you say to them, well, what are you doing today? How do you do it today? They are violating these regulations in every, you know, they'll be sending emails to each other with identifiable information. They will literally say to you, well, I hold up my iPhone and I FaceTime another doctor while holding it up with a patient, you know, all these other kinds of things. And so I don't know that there's necessarily a very clear understanding between, you know, what the technology really allows you to do versus the privacy piece. But I will say that I think we've done a good job of making the uploaders and the community members feel at ease around this kind of thing.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a fair point. I think, you know, kind of as you were suggesting, there's probably a lot of activity happening on a daily basis where you're trying to get an answer in the moment without necessarily thinking through all the interconnected pieces that go around it.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, and so it's kind of like when you sit down with a group of physicians, and we do this all the time in research, and you talk about, well, what are you worried about with privacy? They'll tell you. And then when you say to them, well, what are you actually doing in the real world? You realize that they're actually violating all the things they're worried about. They just don't quite realize it. And so when you start to make it very clear, you know, they start to kind of connect the pieces. I also think that institutions, and by that I mean healthcare systems or hospitals, you know, they also, I think, are very conservative, and they do put a little bit of fear in some of the folks about, you know, kind of, hey, you know, you got to be careful with this kind of thing. And it's obviously a big financial impact to any kind of institution if they're found, you know, violating HIPAA or anything else.
No, I think that's a very fair point. It's there can be a lot of pieces of the healthcare industry that are conservative, and you know, you can as you said, or you're suggesting, you can fully understand the reason for it. But, you know, couldn't believe it or not, we're already starting to get very close to the end of our time. So I'm, you know, we've been talking a lot about how things are happening right now, but I'd also be interested just to get some of your viewpoints in terms of where do you see the healthcare industry continuing to evolve, and as we continue to progress and get more acceptance of all these different types of digital tools and digital interactions. Like, you know, ideally, where do you think, where would you like to see the system move to and end up?
I think that, you know, there's a lot of complex pieces that may, and it's a lot of nuance that make, kind of makes healthcare, especially in the U.S., kind of the convoluted system that it is. But ultimately, I would love to see a very clear way that technology can be leveraged to ultimately improve the outcomes for patients, no matter what that might be. And I think it's very tough to determine where the line is. So for example, we get EKGs uploaded onto our platform all the time. And there's a lot of work going on in artificial intelligence to be able to read these kinds of things. And I think that there is a practical technical application that will move healthcare forward faster than the individual users of the system will feel comfortable potentially. And so I think that what really would be great is if there is a marriage and understanding that technology has capabilities, but it also has to be married with real world implications. And so it's almost kind of like when you talk to a physician about medicine, there is the scientific, you know, part of medicine, and then there's the art in the practice of medicine. And it's never either or, right? It's always some combination. And I think ultimately for technology and healthcare to be married effectively together, they've got to figure out how to kind of dance more effectively together versus one is sprinting and just kind of pulling the other along like an anchor behind. Because ultimately, you know, it's the individual user that has to feel comfortable with the adoption of the technology.
No, and I think that's a great point. It's, you know, like with so many of the new concepts or new ideas that are coming out, it's all about trying to create a continuum. And, you know, as you said, how to get everything married together, as opposed to suggesting that they're replacements and that you have to get rid of what had been done in the past. But believe it or not, as I had said, we're already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Josh Wildstein, for a great conversation today.
Thank you, Matt. It was great. Appreciate it.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at #HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.